Good morning. Adam Lepp here. And once again, I have the pleasure of speaking with one of the premier experts in security, Mr. Ed Johnston, owner, general manager of API Security in Worthington, Ohio. Someone who's been in the security and safety and patrol business for 40 plus years. Seen a lot of changes and is always staying abreast of technology and how it goes hand in hand with staying safe at the home, office, car, and just about everywhere else. New show we have on the station called The Protector Show with security expert Ed Johnston. Ed, thanks again for being on this program. I think our listeners, and I know I, have learned quite a bit since episode number one, and we're going to go ahead and stimulate a few more brain cells today and, again, learn that security is an interesting business but also a serious one, and I think what you can offer, can't really put a price tag on, and it's just great to have this show as a weekly feature on the Talking Place, WWGH. How is business going as we head into the late winter of 2018? Is this a good time for the security business? Is it seasonal? Or?
Well, good morning, listeners, and good morning, Adam. As always, security is on everyone's mind, and if we don't hear about it, we read about it, or we hear from our friends or family members about what's going on within our communities. And one topic I talked that I was going to share about today was about overall investigations and services. And when I get someone coming in my office, it's usually towards an investigation of a loved one or someone that has maybe come up missing, or that there's a domestic situation. And and just before I came was talking about domestic and talking with the attorneys as well as those individuals. So I usually have individuals in my office, and they're usually explaining what's going on within their lives. And what I typically hear is, well, I don't know what's happening with my spouse, and they've changed the way that they treat me, or with what they're doing around the house, or they're no longer around the house. And normally those are the, as I call it, red flags, where something changes with them. But like anything, I normally ask questions, and I usually try to emphasize to those individuals to ask questions like, why is this happening? What has happened within the home to make these or create these kind of changes, Adam? And so usually it's within that first hour that I find out that maybe something is happening, and maybe they need to find out further information by asking that spouse or person that they're living with on what's going on in their lives. So the key emphasis is communication. You need to be asking questions. Since it's a loved one, you care enough, ask the questions. And depending upon what those answers, then usually that's where it's a gut feeling like, well, something's going on. Something's changed. They're doing other things. And so it's one of those situations within the domestic piece where I usually get involved. And usually then I work with an attorney. And like anything, you want to work hand in hand. Now, at times, Adam, I may actually say it's just best to get an attorney. You've shared enough with me into expending more on my side. It'd be best just to expend it on the attorney side and the court sides. This is always an unpleasant situation, but like anything, this is one particular topic that it seems like I usually get asked at different events, or like, you know, what am I doing? And I don't know if you've ever been in a situation or have heard of any, but it's there's one story that I can share that was an elderly person who had been married for many years and had a fixed income, fixed retirement, and she says, I think my husband's cheating. And then I asked the questions. And she came back with the answers that were very startling. And I pretty well, she broke down, like all of us would probably cry. And at that time, I said it'd be best just to get an attorney. But like anything, when you're on fixed incomes and you're depending on each other, and you've made that commitment, that's where those kind of stories kind of hit the heart.
Do you think that the reality shows, I was thinking the Maury Show and about half a dozen other ones, where people take lie detector tests, they confront an ex or a mistress, what have you. Have those helped or hurt, or are they just more for entertainment value? But and for the serious investigations, call someone like yourself or an attorney or someone like myself who can do forensic computer investigations.
Well, that's a great question. And what kind of reminds me is the Leave It to Beaver days where, you know, did this actually happen back during that time period? And it did. But in this day and age with live commercials or live TV, we're seeing more and more people's lives, and we see how twisted they are. And unfortunately, now you can almost watch anything on TV, and there's no longer really a sensory to that. And so, yes, that has affected our communities and our lives and our families very much. Even the computers have. Online has affected our lives even more so, and there was even another story of where classmates.com, and then there was a class reunion, and a man who had been married for over 30 some years decided to go out to his class reunion out in Seattle, Washington, and when he was out there, he decided never to return, and the wife never did see him again. They all filed a divorce. He said, "Keep everything that I got, and I'm starting all over." And so the internet has affected our lives very much in a positive and negative way.
So we try to look at the glass as being half full. I know people often ask me to do a forensic investigation, find out about somebody's criminal record, where he or she used to live, or even if the person's telling the truth about an age. Because we often find people aren't truthful about that. And pretty much if you know where to go in 5 minutes, you can almost get somebody's life story. But I always make this little joke, and you probably have that problem, Ed, is with a common last name, Johnston. As long as your name isn't John Smith, or in your case, a common name like Ed Johnston, you can usually find somebody. So my name is pretty uncommon, so I'm easy to find, but I'm not that interesting because I don't have a record. But if someone does have a somewhat unusual name and you know a little bit about, again, race, height, weight, date of birth, you can find information out very easily. And then go through the proper channels if you want to investigate if someone is cheating or not working. When said, again, we have the deadbeat dads list, the child support, you know, let alone the sex offender list. I mean, so many online resources. But sometimes you do need, bottom line is sometimes you need the brains of a human being. A private detective, again, someone from law enforcement, an attorney, and computer tech like myself, and kind of work together, and with the right resources and the right brains being put together, you can find out so many things nowadays.
Well, that's true. But part of those are true comments. Adam, the one thing that I always share with people is you can't believe everything that you see out on the internet. And if you want to call it fake news, you have to verify all the information. If there's a John Smith and you see a conviction, you need to make sure to go to that courthouse and to verify that information. You cannot take that for face value. You have to be able to cross your T's and dot your I's out of everything that you do. Like anything, the last thing you want to do is to share information that you think is true, but it ends up being false. And that's where we come into play there with verifying information before we distribute or we disseminate it.
With respect to the online resources, Ed, I mean, we know how to get to the county courthouses, and those records obviously are correct, and they're constantly audited and monitored, not just for information, but who's using them and possibly how they're being used. But some of the other sources, often ones that just advertise, you know, some 99-cent a month trial, you have to do a little investigation of your own and to see if those are accurate and see if they can really give you anything beyond what you can get from those free public resources. And again, nothing replaces a skilled professional. Again, someone like yourself with the 40 years of experience and me with so much computer experience, I lost count a long time ago. But again, the official records from the county, those certainly are useful. The DRC site for Ohio to look up inmate records. But the site you see advertised, just be sure that what you're getting is the correct information. And maybe get a second opinion. Maybe check it out in a couple different places. And then if you do need, again, investigative work, and find out if someone is cheating. We might joke about going on the Maury show, and honestly, sometimes that can be helpful. And certainly you're going to find millions of people watching it. But nothing replaces the skill of a private detective and someone with that people knowledge that you really don't learn in school.
Well, that's all true, and like anything, the knowledge of experience supersedes anyone that could gather any education degrees, and that's where the amount of knowing what direction to go is also very helpful. Sometimes people will say, "Well, this other investigator said I need to do this, this, and this," and or it was going to be this amount of money. And, you know, like anything, there's usually other ways to kind of just jump through the chase and to really hopefully get those answers for those individuals. The other thing that we do is background checks. And if it's, you know, you're going to go out with a loved one over Valentine's Day, we do a quick background check. And you know, whoever you want to spend that time with, you want to make sure you really know that person. And so we do those quick background checks and kind of verify information and re-verify before we share what we have. Yes, anybody can go out there and try to figure it out. But the thing is this. Anymore, a lot of individuals will move from county to county to county. And even in Ohio, where you have 88 counties, you could live in one county and then get in trouble right next door to another county. And if you don't check the right county, that's a lot of counties to check versus we can get through those counties a lot quicker. Or states. We just recently had another case where this person out of Ohio County had really been living down in Tennessee for a long period of time. And a lot of times you can't find that per se. Yeah, maybe similar names, but when you really know that someone that can really cut through the chase and get the job done a lot quicker, that's where we have that experience. And in this case, it's actually a court hearing coming up, and like anything, we got to gather that information very quickly for the attorneys and for our clients.
So, Ed, you can combine your knowledge, both things you're naturally good at and what you've learned from 40 years in experience, and I would say learn from your employees and people like me that you associate with, because I can bring a perspective, a more geeky perspective, but I think we do need that. Combine that with what technology offers and just asking the right questions. I guess, again, I sometimes joke about, well, if your name isn't John Smith, I can probably find you. But what if someone does have that very common name? And I guess ironically, your name is very common. Is it more difficult if someone does have a common name and nothing that would allow him or her to be distinguished more easily from someone with a less common name? Does that present an additional challenge, or do you think someone like yourself is so skilled that you're not afraid to find the John Smith because you'll find him anyway?
Well, like anything, Adam, if there's any kind of trail, they can be found. And for those that don't want to be found, it makes it more challenging. And and there are a lot of ghosts out there where there's just nothing that really pops up on those individuals. I mean, anybody can make those decisions and then work towards those decisions if it's something that they want to be publicly known or non-publicly known. I mean, I had a case one time around Thanksgiving where a husband just took off, and the wife thought that he was heading down towards Florida, and she retained me, and she said, "Well, you got 5 days to try to find him." Well, we searched the areas for that individual, and he just was not to be found. Later on, found out months later that we were too early. We jumped the gun too early. We got down there And it was just a few days later he finally showed up, and we might have been able to find him. And that's the difference of timing, experience, and knowing maybe which way to really go.
So that's where your knowledge, your people smarts, professional people smarts, cannot be replaced. It doesn't matter, again, how common or uncommon the name is or anything else that might be distinguishing about the individual. But certainly professionals from different fields can work together, again, with the aid of technology while understanding that we don't want to be too dependent upon that, as you can only find so many things with a computer. No computer is going to be as smart as a brain, at least not as we enter middle of 2018. One thing that also comes up, Ed, and I don't know how you feel about this, especially at your business, but a lot of times when you apply for a job, they will ask about your social media and even go so far as to say, well, go ahead and be Facebook friends with your potential new boss so we can kind of check you out. Of course, you can adjust privacy settings, but if you are friends, there are things that you'll know that a non-friend wouldn't. What do you think about that? Is it reasonable, Ed, for a potential employer to say, okay, Mr. Ms., a potential employee, we want to be your Facebook friend, and I want to look at your posts, figuring, okay, well, understand some of the posts may be casual. The person might be drinking or playing with their dog, and that's fine because we all do that, and it's not being done during working hours. But is that just being too personal, too nosy, Ed? Do we need to draw the line as to exactly what we can investigate if it's a potential employee, potential boyfriend or girlfriend, even asking your neighbors to be Facebook friends? Where do we draw that line, and how has that changed as we enter more technology-oriented society in 2018?
Well, from an employer standpoint, doing any kind of background investigations, especially now with the social media world, it is open. You can go ahead and conduct those investigations within the social media world, and there's many different social websites that would be endless to even mention today. But like anything, when we do a background check, we also check that out just to make sure that this person is being appropriate enough within the social world. Even recently, I had a case where even though the employer did everything correctly with confidentiality agreements and everything else, employee ended up wanting to create spats out into the social world, and that's no place for an employee or person that had accepted a job, that had worked for a job. That is very unprofessional and unethical to do, to put all that stuff out into the social world. And like anything, individuals, especially the millennials, need to understand that that is very unprofessional. That the last thing you should do is to take it out there on social media. It creates ethic problems for you, and it obviously creates other problems for that employer to keep people employed and to even keep the doors open. And that's sad that we see that more often than not anymore.
Yeah, I would agree. And again, it's typically people that are in the millennial age group, but I've seen people 40 plus do this, just post, I guess, flaming on social media, talking about a former boss, former boyfriend, girlfriend, sometimes actually mentioning, tagging people. And it's, goodness sakes, understand Facebook, even with privacy settings, someone's going to find it. It's always a friend of a friend of a friend. That's 7 degrees of separation. And there really is a place for it and a place not to put it. And I'm seeing almost all age groups guilty. It really surprises me that some of my Facebook friends that are middle-aged and what they're posting. And there is a line to be drawn. Of course, it depends also what your line of work is. But you really do have to be careful when you hit that enter key and something is posted. Even if you delete it half an hour later, someone's going to see it. Someone's going to screenshot it. And if there's some kind of a domestic problem going on, maybe you're fighting for child support or obviously filing for a divorce or looking for a job, and someone sees that, someone screenshots it. I've done that for friends of mine who've looked up information about potential or current employees, about someone they think may be cheating on them, and my eyes obviously popped open, but the person whom I share the information with, their eyes popped open even more because they didn't expect this. And so even if you're kidding around, really got to watch what you put on social media. There's a place for things. And yes, don't confuse this with the idea that, no, you should put stuff about your personal life if you think that it's relevant. Again, it's okay if you drink, you play with your dogs. I mean, you go to karaoke, you go to a baseball game. We all do that. That's what social media is about, sharing good times with your friends and family. But just flaming people, even if you really have a beef with that person, don't put it on social media in front of the whole world. And that's a lesson I think we need to learn at a very early age. Things that parents should be teaching their kids. But honestly, I think a lot of parents do that themselves. And kids are probably copying what they're seeing their elders do. And that, I think, is a bit of a problem.
It can be. But like anything, swinging back around about investigations, that's a small amount of types of investigations we've done. We've actually worked with individuals where... needing to serve individuals, serving subpoenas. We've also worked on surveillances and just monitoring activities. And I don't get asked much, but sometimes parents should maybe ask. Their own kids should be followed at times, but I don't get asked that. But it seems like it's always, can you follow this person or that person within a married situation? From an employer standpoint, we do workers' comp investigations, Adam, and we've done a lot of workers' comp investigations where employers suspect that maybe their employees are not totally doing the jobs, and that's where sometimes GPS units can come into play with their vehicles, but sometimes even conducting those investigations and seeing what's really going on. Like anything, when we as an employer are entrusting individuals to do the right thing, sometimes those checks and balances need to be done, and we've sometimes found employees not doing their job and still collecting a paycheck while they're at a bar or at a restaurant or even at home, and they still submit paperwork saying that they're doing something different. So from an employer standpoint, like anything, you should have a investigative and attorney staff ready to help you in those situations, especially with workers' comp, how that's really kind of changed. Workplace violence, having policies and procedures in place where sometimes we will go in after someone needs to be asked to leave, and then we are the buffer between the employer and that ex-employee to get things cleared up. Plus, we also write up policies and procedures for corporations to making sure that they're in compliance with federal and state laws to be able to continue operating.
So that line between being nosy and having a right to know what the individual you're paying to do a job, that line needs to be drawn. And kind of like with a lie detector test, an honest employee is not going to care. I mean, your employees doing investigation, doing patrol work, if they're doing their job, they aren't likely to care if you're tracking where they are, because if anything, it kind of shows what a good job they're doing and how conscientious they are that they aren't taking excess breaks. Whereas a dishonest employee, it's a pretty easy way to find out if there's anything going on that there shouldn't be. And we can use, as I said, the combination of what technology offers with good old-fashioned common sense and these people skills that you glean from many years of experience that you just can't learn in school.
Yeah, well, like you said earlier about polygraphs, and let me clarify that. Back in 1987, polygraphs, that was used very much for all screening, was then no longer allowed on a regular basis due to the scientific pieces of everything about polygraphs. That's in a nutshell. But at times, polygraphs can still be used. There's still a good few people out there that does polygraphs. But now the latest technology is more towards voice analysis. And the voice analysis is used more and has become more credible with conducting those investigations and seeing if someone's really telling the truth or not. So that I wanted to mention that from the earlier discussion about polygraphs. You just don't hear about it as much, but that's the reason why, because of that federal wall that took place back in 1987.
What's your opinion on lie detectors? And I've kind of gone back and forth. As a person with a scientific background, I like the idea that changes in how your body functions are related to being dishonest. I mean, honestly, I'm not a very good liar, and I'm sure I would fail a lie detector test if I was given one, if I was lying about something. But some people very possibly can fool the machine. Some people's bodies function different than others. Do you have an official position? Do you think it's kind of a case by case, or is it just a tool among others in determining guilt or innocence?
Well, you gave me several options, A, B, or C. Let me go with C. It's a tool. It's a tool that can be utilized, but for a long time, that tool was considered to be golden, and that's why it's no longer permissible, because a lot of employers were turning people down because of the polygraph, and that was not what we found. That was not rightfully so. Individuals, even though with a great polygraph examiner, sometimes just can't read between the lines. And over time, that was to be the case, to be challenged. I'm no expert in it. That's just an overview. But like anything, there was a lot of good examiners out there. There still is, and it's just a tool.
So we kind of agree that it's a useful tool, but by no means is it the gospel, so to speak. Were other ways to investigate?
Well, like anything, and sometimes if you see out of TV or individual says, I'll take a polygraph, it also tells you something. But like anything, voice analysis, as well as there's even special classes that you can go with, being able to read people's facials and their eyes and everything else. Yeah, go out on YouTube. It's kind of fun sometimes just kind of searching and see what people say about it. But it's amazing with all the different tools inside the tool bag. If you utilize them all, or if you need to utilize them all, that they're still all there.
Interestingly, Ed, we've all seen the sitcoms. I mean, All in the Family and Three's Company. This has been covered many times. Two of my favorite shows from the 70s and 80s. I mean, Gloria telling Mike, I know when you're lying because your eyebrows go up and down, or you twitch your nose, et cetera. I mean, that is funny, but it's quite true. People's expressions are going to change, again, especially someone like myself. And I'm not a good liar. I mean, I'm just a very truthful person by nature. So it's not a big deal. But for someone who may wish to tell a falsehood but maybe isn't very good at it, it might be quite obvious. But again, you could also coach yourself, I guess, and make it so no one would know, or make it inconclusive. Is that kind of the case, that everybody is a little bit different? And you've seen the TV shows, they say, I know he's lying because he twitches his nose or whatever. We do giggle at that, but it is sort of true.
There is some truth to being able to read body language, and like anything, yeah. I always say if you feel it in your gut, then there must be something there.
And you brought up voice recognition. Of course, being in the voice production business, we use voice recording software to tape this show and provide it on our website and through Facebook. Is there a software where I could just have somebody talk, and if a lie is being told, are there triggers? Could the software just say, oh, well, this peak is too high, this frequency was different, this person's voice is changing too much, we think that the person's lying? Is it kind of work that way? What do you think about the voice recognition? Because that certainly tickled a few brain cells when you mentioned that, being in the business.
Well, like anything, when those examiners go through and start conducting the test, they take a set of samples, and then from those samples, it has appeared that is the best tool to currently use when you really want to determine if someone's telling the truth or not. But like anything, it all comes back to, yeah, individuals and with what those individuals have the capability of doing or not doing. What I want to at least mention is there's certain individuals out there that may have some mental illness, and they think that they're speaking the truth, but at the end, it's really a lie. And when you come across an individual like that, it makes it very difficult to make a determination if it's a truth or a lie.
So the plot does thicken. It isn't quite as simple as the Maury show with lie detector tests and paternity tests and tests for almost everything might make it believe. Again, there is some validity. Lie detector tests, especially on some people, have their value, but by no means are they the all-conclusive yardstick. And nothing can replace the skills of someone like yourself using technology tests like polygraphs or voice detection or just twitching or body movements, gestures, with I guess the common sense that you've gleaned from being in business, and also maybe getting a second opinion, because everybody's going to analyze something a little bit differently.
Well, I think we should invite Maury to our show, and let's get his input on this. What do you think?
Well, we can ask Scott Spears again, the interviewer to the stars. Yesterday he had Rona Barrett on.
And wow.
Again, this gentleman gets on guests that really kind of amaze me. Again, Bob Barker on a couple of times last year. The late Monty Hall.
But I think once again, I think Maury would be a good one to probably ask those questions.
I'll see what I can do.
See if we can get him on the show, and let's talk to him, because he's obviously know a lot of firsthand experiences.
Let's just pretend he was sitting here with us on the show, Ed. What do you think he would say? Do you think he would agree with you that lie detector tests have entertainment value and some scientific value, but by no means are they the all-inclusive yards? I mean, Maury's a very intelligent man with a long reporting history. So again, the TV persona and the man aren't, and just like with Jerry Springer, they aren't really the same, but there certainly are things in common. I think he would respect someone like yourself.
How about Dr. Phil? Should we get him on too?
Oh, that's possible. Well, I'll ask Scott what he can do.
Let's see if we can get one of them on our show, and let's ask him those questions, because I don't want to predict anything with what they're going to say.
I bet they would like the show, though. I'm sure Maury would find both of us interesting.
We could have a lot of fun.
I'll ask Scott. I'll see what I can do.
Okay. He's got the connections.
He's had Phil Donahue on. He's talked to Phil Donahue in person. Yeah. It's amazing whom Scott can get at our microphone. So anyway, back to the serious nature, Ed. Again, investigations are interesting, but they're serious, and there are reasons why we do them. I think you had a couple other things you wanted to talk to our listeners about.
Well, you know, we in comical pieces with talking about shows. When I would teach juvenile delinquency, Adam, is that it's interesting how shows kind of come up with these predetermined analysis where sometimes individuals says, well, you should be able to solve this within an hour, because that's what usually happens on TV. And I said, you know, if I could make just a partial amount of money of what they make in an hour, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing. But it takes a lot longer than an hour to be able to come up with a lot of the answers that they do come up with between the commercials and the TV time. But what I have found over the years is individuals that sometimes ask for the impossibles. And like anything, we're regulated by Homeland Security as well as by the federal rules and regulations. And what we try to do is keep, you know, all of our work above board. And that's really important, because at the end of the day, sometimes when we make the wrong mistakes, that costs the client as well as us within being able to submit evidence into court. So like anything, you do your homework, ask the right questions. Just don't go in and just say, can you do this? Like anything, I always say, come back to common sense. And the common sense of it is that any kind of situation that you may be coming up against is never a silly question to ask. You should go ahead and ask those questions. If you have a gut feeling, make that phone call to us or to whoever you feel comfortable with. Don't wait another 6 months to a year. Our lives are very valuable enough that we need to take the time to figure out where our happiness is. And like anything, it comes back to that circle of communication, understanding, and appreciation.
Yeah, I agree. The only stupid question is the question not asked, as far as I'm concerned. Ed, what would you say to a young person who might want to go into investigations or detective work as a career? Would you say, well, go to the police academy, start as a police detective, or maybe learn about computers, talk to someone like yourself who's done private investigation? And what's the outlook for that career? Is it one of those careers that's going to be losing necessity or gaining necessity, or is it kind of recession-proof because there'll always be bad guys out there that we have to track down?
That's a really good question, and usually a lot of the students that or individuals that call in, they say, "Well, I want to become a detective. I want to become an investigator. I want to go out and solve the mysteries." And what I share with everyone is gain any kind of experience in customer service, to being in a uniform, to understanding overall security, and the rules and regulations that govern who you need to be and to be able to be carried out. Like anything, there's a lot of integrity here. I was just talking to a friend of mine, and I said, you know, you need to review over the rules and regs of Homeland Security, of what regulates us. And like anything, we take that very seriously, and we do every effort to follow those particular guidelines. And so read and research and kind of learn on your own how you could be that better investigator. It's like anything, if it's from a private side to becoming a police officer, a lot of police officers in a lot of departments, it takes between 5 to 10 years just to become that detective, because you need to understand, being on the streets, where the street sense comes to become a better detective. Well, I don't want to spend that much time, sometimes people say. It takes time. You just can't jump from college to become a police officer to an investigator unless you grew up in some hard knocks communities.
Right. So you can't teach the experience that you've gleaned, again, from 35, 40 years of doing this and seeing, obviously, trends, changes, et cetera. There's no way to learn that. Certainly you can get theory, you can be around experts, but just hitting the streets and doing the job and finding successes, finding the satisfaction, you can't replace that. But it's a combination of that as well as the skills, plus knowing the legalities of everything, what you're allowed to ask, what you're allowed to do, many aspects of it. And what you can learn in school is just a small part of it, plus just having a natural ability. Some people are naturally good at some things, and if you are inquisitive and have found that you're good at getting information, be it by the computer, be it by asking questions, that's a good start. And it's certainly a rewarding job, but it's rigorous. It can be frustrating and stressful, but very rewarding if you can go tell somebody, well, this is what we found out about your cheating spouse. That person will thank you for a long time, and again, doesn't pay too badly either. So the satisfaction that you get, I would say, would outweigh the stress and some of the frustration. But again, it's like that almost in any job.
Well, the neat thing about investigations into the private world is you have shoplifting, retail. You have even integrity shops, whereby you go in and let's just say a store or a restaurant, and you want to make sure, or even a bar, and you want to make sure that the employees or associates who are helping those customers and you as an undercover shopper get to experience that. There is a number of different levels of working undercover. And I was very fortunate to be able to work on all levels there. And to even for a bar, let's just say a bar, and all of a sudden the bar owner finds out that all of a sudden he's losing a lot of inventory. Well, then we'll come in and we'll see if the bartender's kind of giving extra shots and not paying, and those individuals not paying for it. That's the neat thing about understanding the world and understanding the ability to be able to be that good investigator. at many different levels. But what I also find out is that a police officer doesn't always become a good private investigator because there's certain things you just can't say. There's certain things that you just can't do. And when you're a police officer and then you cross that line to become a private investigator, it becomes a whole different level. So what I want the listeners to understand is police, public law enforcement, and private investigations has their own uniqueness. And you have to understand that if you go from the public to all of a sudden to the private, and then you want to now accuse somebody, well, now you get to be civilly sued for it. So it's just not that simple to be able to work, to understand, and be efficient into that job.
So certainly know the legal aspects of the job, and that police work certainly is similar to being a PI, but isn't the same, and there are people that are good at both and some that are good at one or the other. I would think for myself, police work, you know, I have immense respect for police officers, but the rules of the job, being the haircut, the hours, just the training, even some of the physical demands may not really be my cup of tea, but the idea of being a PI where you're kind of hitting the streets on your own, getting your hands dirty, that's, you know, certainly has fascinated me. And I see myself maybe less as Sherlock Holmes and just more of the geek sitting behind the computer, just investigating someone, looking at the right websites, which I've done for many customers. And so we all have our niche. And it's important, again, people to work together. No one has the entire skill set. But a good investigative team, a good company, has people with all different types of skills. And together you make a pretty good team. And nothing beats the satisfaction of a successful hunt and successful result for your client. And you make a very happy make the client a very happy person. And you can't put a price tag on the satisfaction of doing that great job.
Well, the listeners need to also understand that even though that maybe there's some red flags, we don't always, Adam, find those answers that they think that we should find. And like anything, we're not going to manufacture something. If we find something, we'll share it. Sometimes, if we find something that maybe we can cross the line with, sometimes we'll say, well, we can't share it, but we'll share it with an attorney. Listeners, you have to understand from a legality standpoint, there's a lot of ethics here. And so if someone says, hey, we'll be willing to share this with an attorney, just get that attorney, then at that time, there's a lot of attorney-client privileges that go into that. And so it's just people needing to be educated and understanding enough that, well, I paid you. Why should I now have to – now why do I have to wait for the attorney? It's because of the legalities of it. What we've found over the years is sometimes PIs give in information, and then afterwards that information's misused. And like anything, we want to help, but at the end of the day, we also have to go back to our families and to our lives.
Bottom line is do your job ethically and responsibly. And hopefully everybody will win, even if you can't get the result that the customer had hoped for. But every day you go to bed realizing that you did a good deed. And you, as I say, stimulated a few brain cells and learned something from your experience and hopefully helped out your fellow person. And can't really beat that feeling, can you?
No, not at all. And you know, even though we've been talking about the domestic piece, you know, from a corporate piece, we've sometimes have helped corporations being able to identify maybe if they're looking at wanting to buy a corporation. We do due diligence and we do backgrounds and we do investigations to make sure that those corporations are not fictitious or someone's not buying something that they shouldn't buy. We've actually been involved in businesses after they've bought a corporation and then found out it was a very bad investment, and sometimes we'll go out and we'll try to find those assets. Or those individuals that sold the business assets and see if there's any recoveries there. From a civil litigations, doing auto accidents to accidents reports, accident reconstruction to obtaining statements, recorded statements, written statements from those witnesses. At times, Social Security traces, employment checks, education checks. I can't tell you how many times where someone says, well, I don't think this person has this degree. And we find out, yeah, you're right, they don't have that degree. And that was the basis of getting that job. Other kinds of checks with vehicles. And all this is on the up and up. In other words, what we do is from the private sector. We do everything by the book. And at the end, we help a lot of clients in many different ways.
Thank you for listening to The Protector Show with security expert Ed Johnston. Listen every Friday morning between 11:10 a.m. and noon for this important new show here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. For more information on Ed and the show, please visit theprotectorshow.com.